radio. That go where you go medium calls radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama, radio. Who?
If you want to know a nation, it's been said, listen to its satirists. If you want to know about America, one good place to start is Stan Freberg. Stan Freberg, the grand satirist of radio and records and a legend in the world of marketing, was born around the time that the first commercial stations went on the air. The son of a Baptist minister in Pasadena, California, Stan Freberg fell in love with radio early on. When other kids went outside to play ball, he says, he went inside to play the radio. It was the daytime radio sitcoms like Vic and Sadie, or the brainy comedy of Fred Allen, and the compelling drama and choruses of Norman Corwin's On a Note of Triumph that Stan Freberg cites as his influences. After work doing cartoon voices for Warner Brothers and entertaining overseas during World War II and acting on radio, Stan Freberg finally landed a hit that he had honed from his nightclub act. It was called John and Marsha. Stan Freberg is our guest this hour. Welcome, Stan Freberg. Tell us about John and Marsha. We feel we know these folks. We forget that it's one man, one voice, and that it's all just sound.
Yes, that was my first record for Capitol, which was in 1950. And it was just these two people going, John, Marsha. You know, and nobody ever said anything except each other's names. It was a satire on soap operas. And I thought it wouldn't be interesting if there were no dialogue and no script, because these soap operas never went anywhere. You know, 15 minutes later and a half hour later, you're not much about one inch further than you were yesterday.
John. Marsha. John. Marsha. Marsha. John. Marsha. John. Marsha. John. Marsha.
Marsha.
John.
Marsha. Oh, Marsha, Marsha.
John, John. Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. John, John, John. Marsha, 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 Marsha. John, 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 John.
Marsha.
John.
Marsha.
Different women named Marsha come up to me and say, I wanted to meet you all these years, and I don't know whether to hit you or hug you, which is not far from what Eartha Kitt said to me one time when, after she heard my version of
C'est si bon,
she said, Stan Freberg, I don't know whether to kiss you or scratch you. I said, well, either one would be okay.
Monsieur, I want you should assist me later in this song, no? When I give you the signal, say, c'est bon, like that.
C'est bon, like that.
Pardonnez-moi, monsieur. Just say, c'est bon, forget it like that.
C'est bon, forget
it
like that.
No. Just say, c'est bon, period.
C'est bon, period.
Stop the music. Stop it. Repeat after me. Si?
Si.
Bon?
Bon.
Si bon?
Si bon.
It's good, yes?
It's good, yes.
It's magnifique, messieurs. Je t'embarre de meatheads. C'est si bon. Des parties d'époque. Bras-dessus, bras-dessus. Quand j'entends des chusons.
C'est bon, c'est bon.
Too soon, messieurs. Do not call me. I will call you. C'est bon. Déserdir des mondes. Mais partir et des deux. Mais qui est des
c'est bon, c'est bon.
Too soon, messieurs. I did not give you the signal. Quoi fait? En voyant notre émile.
You started satirizing pop music in the 50s. I mean,
yeah.
You could say even before it got bad, you were satirizing the Platters, Harry Belafonte, Lawrence Welk, the Bubble Machine.
Well, you know, I didn't particularly like the sound of Johnny Ray, for example, and I really loathed the sound of the Platters and the Chords and those other wonderful groups because, you know, I come out of worship of jazz and swing. I mean, my people were Count Basie and Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, and that's about a million miles away from groups like the Platters. What I really hated was that cling, cling, cling piano that went over and over and over. And so one of the studio musicians was the great Paul T. Smith, jazz piano player, who kept playing that cling, cling, cling. And funny thing, in the studio, his hand began to hurt from doing that over and over. And he said, hey, Freeberg, I really don't have to keep playing this cling, cling, cling jazz all night, do I? I said, yes, you do, just so we finish this record at least.
Oh, yes, I'm a great pretender. Pretend that I'm doing well. Just a moment, please. You on the piano. What are you doing?
Well, man, I just play little ooh-baba-doo, like ooh-ba-ba, ooh-ba-ba. See, I think it's a mistake on my part. I got the same chord over and over, like a clink, 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 clink.
That's right. That's right.
You want me to play the same thing all through the song?
You catch on fast.
Wow.
My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
Man, you scared me. Don't do that.
Oh, yes. I'm a great pretender. I'm the great pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown.
My hand is falling off, man.
I seem to be, but I'm not, you see. I'm wearing my heart like a crown.
What a drag.
Pretending that you're still around.
I thought you were through, man.
No, no!
I don't want to play that lick no more, man. I come from a different school, like Shearing, Eric Garnest. Dig, man.
That's not gonna sell the record!
But man, don't bug me. I don't want to play that cling, cling, cling jazz.
You play that cling, cling, cling jazz? Well, you won't get paid tonight. Well, all right. To feel the feeling of make believe. You see how lovely that turned out?
the darling part appreciated.
And gay like a clown. I seem bullet. I seem low down. I seem retard.
Don't stop me now, man. I got to where I like it.
Stop it. Stop it, I say. I'm getting out of here. He ruined the ending. One of the loveliest parts in the whole. Peace.
The whole piece.
Your Harry Belafonte takeoff on Deo was almost as famous as the original.
Thank you. Well, it just seemed to me that Harry was yelling a little more than was absolutely necessary, you know, where he was going, Dale, Dale. So I thought, well, what if I had a bongo player sitting next to me? Wow, man, I have to ask you not to shout like that. You know, that would, you put a jazz musician, just like I did in The Great Pretender, the jazz piano player didn't want to play that cling, cling, cling jazz. The jazz bongo player didn't want somebody yelling in his ear. I finally met Harry Belafonte at the cocktail party, and I walked in. He didn't know what I looked like, and I said, hi, Harry. And I had my hand out, Stan Freberg. Man, he withdrew his hand out of the air, took a step backward. Talk about fearing that somebody had leprosy or something.
Day-o! Day-o! Daylight come and me won't go home.
I'll have to ask you not to shout like that.
Well,
it's like right in my ear, man.
Well, it goes with the song.
Yeah, but don't holler in my ear,
well,
man.
Well, it's authentic calypso.
Yeah, but like when I stand next to me, man.
Well, the shout go with the bongo drums.
Well, not my bongo drums, man. I mean, move away.
Well, I don't see why.
No. Stand over next to the guitar, man.
He sent me over here.
Yeah? Well, then sing soft, man. You know, I mean, like, wow.
Okay.
It's
too loud, man. That's better.
He's a day, 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 oh. Daylight come and me want up home.
Yeah, man.
Who work all night and a drink of rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stock banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Lift 6 foot, seven foot, 8 foot,
man. Too loud, man. Too loud.
6 foot, 7 foot.
Hold it,
foot,
man. Hold it, hold
foot,
it, man.
Punch.
My ears, my ears, like my ears. No, hold it, man.
It's too shrill, man. It's too piercing.
Oh, well, I don't see why.
No, it's too piercing, man. It's too piercing.
Well, I got to do the shout.
No, man, it's too piercing. Like, I don't dig loud noises.
Well, you ruined the whole...
piercing.
...record is what you do.
Yeah, well, tough. I'll take my bongos and go, man, because the whole thing is, like, bugging me anyhow.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. I won't shout.
No, I'm cutting, man, like I didn't want to make this gig in the first place.
No, no, wait a minute. I'll be soft.
Yeah? Well, then back off from me, man. It's too piercing.
Okay. How's this?
Too loud, man.
Okay.
Too loud, man. I can still hear you. Would you mind leaving the room?
Okay.
Crazy.
Daylight come and me want go home. Daylight come and me want go home. That beautiful bunch of ripe banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come. Oh, man, don't sing about spiders. I mean, ooh, well, like I don't dig spiders.
Well, that's how the song goes. He goes,
hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Is that it? Can I leave now?
Oh, not yet. We got a big finish.
Hey.
Yeah, man.
I locked myself out.
Crazy.
I come through the window.
Daylight come and me won't go home.
Go back a little bit. You sniffed out political correctness and you were making fun of it.
In 1957, on the show in which I replaced Jack Benny on CBS, I had gotten weary of the censor at CBS every 5 minutes trying to censor me. And he said to me one time, "Look, this Zasloff family of jugglers on your show this week, what nationality is that?" I said, "Well, Zasloff." I said, "I don't know, Czechoslovakian, Polish, something like that." He said, "No, change it to Smith or Jones. Don't use any names except Smith or Jones. We don't want to offend any ethnic groups, you know." So on the air, I kept the name Zasloff. "Mr. Zasloff," I said, "well, by the way, what nationality is that, sir, Zasloff?" He said, "Swiss. This way we don't offend nobody." And so, so anyhow, I finally... I finally got to the point where I sang Old Man River, and I had this censor. I didn't say it was a CBS censor. It was from the Citizens Committee, and Dawes Butler played the man who would ring this annoying klaxon every time I said something he didn't approve of. But sure, that was a satire on political correctness 30 or 35 years before the term was even coined.
Just kidding.
But it's great to be with you tonight. We have a...
pardon me, Mr. Freeberg, but my name is Tweedley.
Well, we all have our problems.
I am the censor from the Citizens Radio Committee, and I feel...
You, from the Citizens Radio Committee, you say?
That's exactly what I said, yes.
And what is your purpose in being here?
I must okay all the material used on your program here. And I think the best method is to just sit back here and interrupt when I feel it's necessary.
You mean you plan to stop me every time I do something that you think is wrong?
Exactly. I'll just sound my little horn like this. And then you stop, and I'll tell you what's wrong.
Somehow I can tell this is going to be one of those days.
You just go right ahead, Mr. Freeberg. Don't mind me.
Yeah. Now I'd like to say...
You forgot to say thank you, Mr. Freeberg. Politeness is an essential in radio programming. Your program goes into the home. We must be a good influence on children.
And that's a darling little horn there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much, Mr. Tweedley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
I'd like to sing a old river song in honor this week of National Mississippi Riverboat Paddle Wheel Week. Mr. May, if you please.
Very polite, Mr. Freeberg.
Thank you.
Old Man River, that old...
All right, Tweedley, politeness I dig, but what in the world is wrong with Old Man River?
The word old has a connotation some of the more elderly people find distasteful. I would suggest you make the substitution, please.
I suppose you insist?
Precisely. You may continue.
Okay, music.
You forgot to say thank you.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Mr. Tweedley.
You're quite welcome, I am sure.
Elderly man river, that elderly man river, he must know something, but he don't say nothing.
All right, hold it, fellas. Now what, Tweedley?
The word something, you left off the G.
But that's authentic. Something. Something. That's the way the people talk down there.
The home is a classroom, Mr. Freeberg.
I know you said that.
Keep in mind the tiny tots. And but furthermore, think back. You'll recall that you said, "But he don't say nothing."
Mm-hmm.
Now, really, Mr. Freeberg, that's a double negative. Do you mean he does say something?
No, I just wasn't using my head, I guess.
I mean, after all, it should be grammatically correct, keeping in mind...
the tiny tots, yes.
You probably mean he doesn't say anything.
I suppose I mean that, yes, I guess. All right, fine, you win. All right, Billy, music. Thank you.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Elderly man river, that elderly man river, he must know something, but he doesn't say anything. He just keeps rolling, rolling. He just keeps rolling along. He don't,
doesn't plant taters, potatoes. He doesn't plant cotton cotting. And then those that plant them are soon forgotting. But every man river ain't got to be rolling along.
Excellent.
Thank you. The tiny tots again, was it?
Exactly.
Sorry about that. Here we go. Oh, we got by that one.
Don't sweat hard.
You get out there. Okay, take your finger off the button, Mr. Tweedley. We know when we're licked. Well, that concludes Elderly Man River. Oh, yes, and thank you for being with us, Mr. Tweedley.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Talk about things that get famous. The legend is that somebody once said they heard your Dragnet take off and said, I think they made a TV show out of that record.
Yeah. I went to Australia twice with Frank Sinatra and once by myself and Buddy Rich. The reason I went to Australia is that St. George and the Dragonette was number one on the Australian hit parade. And they had never seen the show Dragnet. It just hadn't got there yet. So by the time I came back the next time, somebody from the Melbourne Sun ran up to me at the airport and said, Mr. Freeburg, somebody has gone and built a whole television show around your record. And I said, was his name Jack Webb? He said, that's the bloke. Okay, so I said, well, he'll hear from my attorney in the morning, believe me. You know, I had to revise my thinking as a satirist and a parodist because I've always sworn up and down that the audience has got to have a frame of reference for the target of the satire, or what it is you're parodying. I had to revise that thinking because it didn't make any difference. The thing evidently survived as a piece of entertainment on its own. That record became possible because I needed the music from Dragnet, and therefore I had to go to Jack Webb, and who it turned out was a Freeburg fan. So he loaned me Walter Schumann, who wrote the Dragnet theme, and the entire Dragnet Orchestra, who played the show every week. So the reason it sounds so authentic is that I was in the studio with Dawes Butler and June Foray, two great stock company of mine actors. And here is the Dragnet Orchestra sitting in the same room doing it.
The legend you are about to hear is true. Only the needle should be changed to protect the record.
This is the countryside. My name is St. George. I'm a knight. Saturday, July 10th, 8:05 p.m. I was working out of the castle on the night watch when a call came in from the chief. A dragon had been devouring maidens. Homicide. My job. Slay him. You call me, chief?
Yeah, it's the dragon again, devouring maidens. The king's daughter may be next.
Mm-hmm. You got a lead?
Nothing much to go on. Say, did you take that .45 automatic into the lab to have him check on it?
Yeah, you were right.
I was right?
Yeah. It was a gun. 8:22 p.m. I talked to one of the maidens who had almost been devoured. Could I talk to you, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm St. George, ma'am. Homicide, ma'am. I want to ask you a few questions, ma'am. I understand you were almost devoured by the man. Is that right, dragon?
It was terrible. He breathed fire on me. He banged me already.
How can I be sure of that, ma'am?
Believe me, I got it straight from the dragon's mouth.
11:45 p.m. I rode over the King's Highway. I saw a man. Stopped to talk to him. Pardon me, sir. Could I talk to you for just a minute, sir?
Sure, I don't mind.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a knave.
Didn't they pick you up on a 903 last year for stealing tarts?
Yeah.
So what, do you want to make a federal case out of it?
No, sir. We heard there was a dragon operating in this neighborhood. We just want to know if you've seen him.
Sure, I seen him.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe him for me?
What's to describe? You see one dragon, you seen them all.
Would you try and remember, sir, just for the record? We just want to get the facts, sir.
Well, he was, you know, he had orange polka dots.
Yes, sir.
Purple feet, breathing fire and smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And one big bloodshot eye right in the middle of his forehead, and, like that.
Notice anything unusual about him?
No, he's just a run-the-mill dragon, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, you can go now.
Hey, by the way, how are you going to catch him?
I thought you'd never ask. A dragon net. 3.05 p.m. I was riding back into the courtyard to make my report to the lab. Then it happened. It was a dragon.
Hey, I'm the fire-breathing dragon. You must be St. George, right?
Yes, sir.
I see you got one of them new 45 caliber swords.
That's about the size of it.
You slay me.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
What do you mean?
I'm taking in a 502. You figure it out.
What's the charge?
Devouring maidens out of season.
Out of season? You never pinned that rap on me. Do you hear me, cop?
Yeah, I hear you. I got you in a 412, too.
A 412? What's a 412?
Overacting. Let's go.
On September the 5th, the dragon was tried and convicted. His fire was put out, and his maiden devouring license revoked. Maiden devouring out of season is punishable by a term of not less than 50 or more than 300 years.
We'll be back after a short break. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR News.
I developed a taste for chocolate milk. My mother would go to the kitchen shelf, and combining the ingredients would do it herself. She traded at a store where things were sold, but the thing they didn't carry it was Meadow Gold.
She traded at a store where things were sold, but the thing they didn't carry it was Meadow Gold.
We're talking with the radio genius Stan Freberg this hour. Stan Freberg worked in radio for 50 years, but he was an ad man, too, known as the father of the funny commercial.
Exotic Chongqing Chow Mein. So crisp, so succulent, you'll want it every night of the week.
Just a minute there. You can't expect people to eat Chongqing Chow Mein every night of the week.
Why not?
Well, I mean, wouldn't that get a little tiresome? You wouldn't expect Chinese people to eat American food every night, would you? Like hot dogs?
Well, here comes an ancient Chinese gentleman now. We'll ask him. Hello.
Hello.
What did you have to eat last Monday?
Hot dog.
Last Tuesday?
Hot dog.
Wednesday?
Hot dog.
Thursday?
Hot dog.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Hot dog, hot dog, hot dog.
Recognize this color? Sure you do. That's the sound of Pittsburgh Paint's Mandarin Orange.
Are you people mad?
What?
Painting the microphone.
No, PPG has given Color TV a fair chance to show Pittsburgh's 720 precise colors.
Huh?
But while it may be okay to have green newscasters or, say, a fuchsia-colored Johnny Carson...
On my set, he's more of a salmon. Ed McMahon is fuchsia.
A territory's great, but you gotta have a state. But you gotta have a state, but you gotta have a state. States look good, just like a state should. To have a state highway go through, to have a state fair to go to, to have a big rose hoop-dee-doo, you gotta have a state.
When television started to get popular, Stan Freberg did radio commercials, advertising radio. He famously filled Lake Michigan with hot chocolate.
Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Cheering extras.
Ken Freeberg, you've written for all kinds of advertising, a lot of it for television as well as radio. What's the difference between writing for those two media when you're selling something?
Well, there isn't really much difference to me. I mean, except that when you're writing for radio, you have to create for the theater of the mind. And you have to be sure you have created this great mental picture for people to listen to and pay attention to and so forth. And if you do it right, it's amazing, the results. You know, one of my clients was the Chongqing Chow Mein Company.
Yeah.
And I'd had a commercial one time that was in the studio. We were running about 2 seconds too long, about 62, and I had to do it in 60, of course. And the man from the Chongqing Corporation was there, and I had a line in there where a man said, let me tell you about this great product. We have the vegetables in one can and the sauce in the other. Sir, would you mind looking at me while I'm talking to you? And I said, yeah, but I just noticed I have a squeaky wheel on my grocery cart here. I said, uh-huh, well, try and pay attention. Okay. So now the guy from the Chongqing Company says, oh, well, that's an easy cut. Just take out the line about the squeaky wheel and the grocery cart. That really doesn't sell chow mein. So I said, no, that stays in. That's a little Freeberg touch that people may remember. I said, well, I don't think so. But I was in charge of the session, so the line stayed in. Okay. 10 years later, I was at the Algonquin Hotel in New York, and I said to the bell captain, I need a new crystal for my watch. He said, you're in luck. Right across 44th Street, across the street there, the little old jeweler. So I said, fine. I walked across the street. I knocked on the door, and this man with a jeweler's loop in his eye looks up. Now he buzzes me in. Bleh. Now I take 3 steps inside the jeweler, and this jeweler says to me, I think I got a bad wheel on my grocery cart here. I said, wow. Do you remember that? Oh, yes. I said, okay, now comes the tough part. What was the name of the product? He said, oh, that's easy. Chongqing Chow Mein. And I applauded him. You know, now, I have many stories like that I could tell about the Sunsweet Prunes checking into the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City one time. At 2 a.m, a woman behind the desk yells out, today the pits, tomorrow the wrinkles. Sunsweet marches on. Now I say to the woman, gee, that's great. How many times did you see that commercial of mine? She said, I only saw it once, but I always kept hoping I'd hear it again. You know, when I tell that story, those stories, to people who've been schooled at the Harvard Business School, they say, oh, no, that's impossible. No, you need a lot of weight behind the commercial. Oh, impossible. They get somebody could hear or see a commercial one time and remember it for years. But I'm a witness that this has happened. And so it's not so tough, really, to sell a product if you know what you're doing.
Do you know the commercial maker Tony Schwartz in New York?
Yeah, I don't know him well, but I do.
He did that famous Girl with the Daisy Petal commercial for Lyndon Johnson against Barry Goldwater.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned him only because he says it's always the sound, it's the written word, even in a TV commercial, that's crucial.
That's right.
You've got to get
the visuals to the ear
with a spoken word. And it always makes me wonder why radio commercials don't work that way, too.
Well, I was speaking somewhere at a seminar, and somebody, and some young guy in the audience who didn't know any better said, well, we figured out at our agency the easiest way to create a radio spot is to just lift off the soundtrack from a television 30-second spot. Now you got a radio spot. I said, no, you don't. I'm sorry, pal. That's not how you create a radio commercial. You create it for the ear as though there was no television commercial that you lifted the soundtrack off of. It's amazing that people, many, many people now in advertising don't get it. But Tony Schwartz is absolutely right. It starts with the word. It starts with the written word.
He says the ear is the crucial receiver, even in visual television commercials.
That's right. It all starts with me, like Shakespeare said. It starts with the play. It starts with the word, the written word.
Tell us the story of Omaha, which was both the send-up of the musical Oklahoma, but it was also a commercial in its way.
Yes. Well, I had the idea for the Butternut Coffee Company of Omaha, Nebraska. I had always wanted to do a takeoff on Broadway musical original cast albums, and they always recorded those in the day or the night when this theater was dark. so there were no people in there to absorb the sound. Therefore, it sounded like they were doing these original cast albums in Mammoth Cave, because they echoed, the voice echoed all over the place. And that's why everybody yells their lines, "Say, Julie, you know, this is what we call an Omaha moon." And everybody was enunciating so clearly, you know. But the next thing I knew, what started out to be a 3-minute commercial, because I said, nobody's ever done a 3-minute radio commercial, so I'll write one. Well, I got carried away, and after I finished the 3 songs, Billy May got carried away and decided to write an overture on the front. So anyhow, by the time Billy got through with the overture and I expanded a couple of things, it was a 6.5-minute commercial. So now I knew I was in trouble, and so I thought, well, how am I going to get this on the air? So after being laughed out of the offices of CBS Radio in Los Angeles, KNX, and NBC, and ABC, and 2 or 3 other powerful independent stations, I thought, well, there's only one place left, and that's KMPC, a giant 50,000-watt station in Los Angeles. So I went into this guy, Stan Spiro, and I said, look, this is a great radio commercial I've just done, and we want to buy some time on your station. He said, wonderful, wonderful. I said, sit down, and we'll play it on your sound system. And we played it, and he applauded at the end. He said, that's great. By the way, he said to me, how long is that? I said, I don't know. It's somewhere around 4 or 5 minutes, I think, somewhere, maybe a couple seconds longer. And he said, 5 minutes? He said, where are we going to play that? I said, oh, I got just the place. You're the only station in Los Angeles broadcasting the Dodger games, so we'll advertise it in 1-minute spots, and at the end of the Dodger games, we'll put this commercial on. And I said, not only that, we won't put it on any other radio station in Los Angeles. He said, really? I said, that's right. You have it exclusively. So he did what I told him. He put it on the air every day at the end of the Dodger games, and the coffee went from 3% of the Southern California market to 12%, which is a quadruple increase. Looking back now, I don't know how I ever got away with that.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Biff.
We thought maybe you weren't going to make the weenie bake.
What? Not make the weenie bake? Say, that'd be the day when I'd miss the weenie bake in Omaha.
Well, gee, what's so hot about Omaha?
What? Who are you?
I'm a stranger in town.
Well, listen, stranger in town, you ought to try living here. It'd very likely put the roses back in your cheeks.
Listen, when I want any roses in my cheeks, I'll let you know. Besides, what do they got in Omaha?
What do they got in Omaha?
What do they got in Omaha that they haven't got in other cities?
They got happier people.
Look at those happy people. Happier cause they live in Omaha.
What do you see in Omaha that you never see in other cities?
You see whistling people.
Whistling cows, they live in Omaha. Come on along, they got the world's best beat and shoot. They got the prettiest girls to boot. And you can join Axe Carbon Boy.
That's Nebraska backwards, boy. What did I do in Omaha that I never did in other cities? I just settled down here.
Brother, they got some town here.
Take it from me, you'd love to stay and
spend your pay and make some hay in Omaha.
Yeah, but that's not what I meant. I mean, they must have something else in Omaha besides what you mentioned, some special...
As a matter of fact...
Hi, Biff.
Hello, you little minx. Penny for your thoughts.
Well, I was just wondering what sort of special...
Not you, her.
I was thinking, isn't it a lovely moon tonight?
Yes, Julie. Back here we call it an Omaha moon.
Yeah, but...
Omaha moon keeps shining, on Omaha keeps shining down.
We'd like it if you wouldn't shine on towns of stuff, or for that matter, any other town.
Omaha moon, we heard that you shine the Cedar Rapids last June. We'll thank you to remember that you are.
Listen, try not to burst into song every time I ask you a question, will you? Besides, why should the moon only shine on Omaha?
Because Omaha is the home of delicious...
Biff! Oh, Biff! I hope we'll always be this happy.
Happiness is not a sometime thing in Omaha.
Oh, no.
Omaha, sing out for Omaha. Lift up your throat and shout hooray for the geographical center of the USA.
Stan Feinberg, a lot of people remember a kind of theatrical history you composed of the United States of America, volumes 1 and 2, separated, as I remember, by quite a number of years. Remind them of some of the speaking parts there. George Washington, Alexander Graham Bell, a lot of other great guys.
Well, I flunked high school history because it was about as entertaining as a federal government report on the effect of boll weevils on the cotton crop or something. So a few years later, you know, like a decade later, I was a Capitol recording artist. I was looking for something to build a thematic structure for a whole album on, and suddenly I realized, boy, oh boy, remember how boring history was? What if I could now make it entertaining? The first line that popped into my head was Christopher Columbus saying to Queen Isabella, for whom he was trying to get boats to discover the New World, "All right, we'll go over once again. First, you hawk the jewels, you give me the money, and I buy the ships. Then I discover the New World, and I'll send for you." "You dump the king" was somewhere in there. But anyhow, I thought, okay, that's the attitude. So it was a humorous look with a satiric viewpoint of American history. And the thing that has thrilled me all these years is that history teachers, from high school history teachers, college history teachers, tell me that they have used that album as a teaching aid all these years. And that's a thrilling thing to me.
The trouble continued to brew. It was a time for action and a time for words. On a hot July night in 1776, Benjamin Franklin was aroused from his work by the call of destiny.
Hey, you in there, Ben?
Who's that, Sylvia?
It's the call of destiny.
Come on, take a look through the curtains there.
It's Tom Jefferson.
What, again? It's no good. I'll have to let him in. I'm coming, I'm coming.
Hi, Ben.
Tom?
You got a minute?
Well, I tell you the truth, we were just going out of town for the weekend.
But it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned.
What does that got to do with anything, Franklin?
I don't know. It's the first thing that came into my head. I'm just making conversation. An idle brain is the devil's playground, you know.
So you're pretty good at that, aren't you?
Yeah, there's some new wise sayings I just made up.
Wise sayings?
Yeah, I call them wise sayings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I got this petition here. I've been circulating around the neighborhood. Uh-huh. Kind of thought you'd like to sign it. It's called the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I heard about that. Sounds a little suspect, if you ask me.
What do you mean, suspect?
Well, you're advocating the overthrow of the British government by force and violence, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but we've had it with that royal jazz.
Who's we?
Oh, all the guys.
Who's all the guys?
Oh, George, Jim Madison, Alex Hamilton, Johnny Adams, you know, all the guys.
The lunatic fringe.
Oh, they are not.
Bunch of wild-eyed radicals. Professional liberals, don't kid me.
Oh, you call George Washington a wild-eyed radical?
Washington? I don't see his name on there.
No, but he promised to sign it.
Oh, yeah, that's George for you. Talks up a storm with them wooden teeth. Can't shut him off. When it comes time to put the name on the old parchment of Rooney, try and find him.
And what are you so surly about today?
Surly to bed and surly to rise.
Oh, all right, all right. Let's knock off the one-line jokes and sign the petition. What do you say, huh, fella?
Well, let me skim down it here. When in the course of human events, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That's pursuit of happiness.
Well, all your S's look like F's here.
Oh, it's stylish.
Oh, I see.
It's in. It's very in.
Oh, well, if it's in. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, solemnly publish and declare that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and so on. A little overboard, isn't it?
Oh, well,
you write this?
Yeah, I knocked it out. It's just a first draft.
Well, I tell you, why don't you leave it with me and I'll mail it in,
oh,
huh?
Oh, come on.
Oh, I tell you, Tom, let me say this, I'm with you in spirit. I'm sure you understand that, but, you know, I gotta play it conservative. I'm a businessman.
Yeah. But getting back to the signing of the petition, how about it, huh?
Well,
it's a harmless paper.
Oh, sure, harmless. I know how these things happen. You go to a couple of harmless parties, sign a harmless petition, forget all about it. 10 years later, you get hauled up before a committee. No, thank you. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life writing in Europe.
Oh, come on.
Come on what?
Come on and put your name on the dotted line.
I got to be particular what I sign.
It's just a piece of paper.
Just a piece of paper, that's what you say.
Come on and put your signature on the list.
It looks to have a very subversive twist.
How silly to assume it. Won't you non-deplume it today? You're so skittish. Who possibly could care if you do?
The un-British Activities Committee, that's who.
Let's have a little drinko and fill the quill.
It sounds a little pinko to me, but still.
Knock off the timid manner if you want a banner to raise.
Banner to raise.
You must take,
I must take
a stand,
a stand
for this brave
new land,
for who wants
to live,
so conserve,
so concerned, but if
I don't diss, he don't disagree,
agree,
but a man can't be too careful what he signs these days.
Thank you very much, Stan Freeberg.
Thank you very much, Christopher. And God bless all your listeners and all the people supporting NPR.
Stan Freeberg's CD and video box set is called Tip of the Freeberg, the Stan Freeberg Collection, 1951 to 1998. This hour of The Connection was produced by Keith Shields. Mary McGrath is our senior producer. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston.
Yes, who are you?
I'm Mary Ann Feemster. I'm 10 years old. I've been sitting in the audience.
Yes.
I've been thinking over what you said about how you're doing this because there aren't any more radio programs.
Yes.
Mr. Freeberg, what's a radio program?
Well, when you listen to the radio in the morning, what do you hear?
Disc jockeys and news, or sometimes news and disc jockeys. Is it possible to hear something else?
It was back in the 1940s, yes.
Back in the olden days?
There were what we call radio programs, like what we're doing here with actors and live musicians and sound effects men and guest stars.
Oh, you mean like a television program when the picture tube blows out?
Something like that, yes.
What did you look at?
You didn't look at anything. You just listened.
Boy, talk about your radical ideas.
Look, dear, you're just too young to remember, I guess. I'll have someone from the audience explain it. Anybody here remember radio?
I do.
Oh, good. Good, here's a lady. Here's a lady. Come right up here, madam. Watch your step, dear. Yeah, you do remember radio programs, do you?
Oh, yes, I remember them.
Uh-huh. You used to listen to them, did you?
I did as a girl, yes. My goodness, yes.
For the benefit of this young lady, could you tell us what it was like?
Well, it was, I'm trying to remember.
Just take your time.
Well, if my memory serves me correct, we'd hurry to get the dishes done, and we'd all sit around the living room listening to the,
Radio,
that's it.
Pardon me, what did you look at while the radio was on?
Oh, we looked looked at each other, kind of stared off into space while Inner Sanctum was on the Whistler, the Shadow.
Huh?
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Do you know who said that?
Who?
Lamont Cranston, that's who. Compared to him, my dear, James Bond is a fink.
Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation. PRI, Public Radio International. From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by SCORE Educational Centers, helping instill a love of learning in kids through personalized academic coaching and confidence building. Location information at 1-888-3-SCORE-4.